Another sorrow, sad edition of Locked On Jaguars is here. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Make sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host, Chris Thornton at Misto Christopher. Welcome back to the show, everyone. After an embarrassing defeat at home, beginning a what is now a three-game losing streak for the Jacksonville Jaguars to the Houston Texans by a score of 20-7. Chris, you were at the game. Just give me one word to describe it.
Man, there's a lot of words that could describe this one.
A lot of them you probably should not say on air.
I'll just go with the easy one, just saying disappointment.
I would say it was a disappointment too, because this was the must-win game of the year, without a doubt. You break that two-game losing streak, you maintain a winning record, or at least a 500-plus record, which is not something they've ever been below since Doug Marrone took over as head coach in week 16 of the 2016 season. Now, that's not a terribly long time, but for this franchise, it feels like years. But they didn't do that. Offense, once again, came out stale. I thought the defense played a lot better today than they did in the past couple of weeks, because when you look at it, the defense really only gave up 10 points. The Texans were gifted with great field position off of two Blake Bortles fumbles to score the other 10 points. And in the second half, the defense, when the offense finally started moving the ball a little bit with a different gunslinger under center, the Texans did not score again. So we're going to go ahead and get into kind of breaking down both sides of the ball, offense and defense. In the second segment of the show, we're going to talk exactly what you guys want to talk about, the quarterback situation in the locker room. Then after that, we're going to take some questions from Twitter. Also give a little bit of a preview as to what we are going to start shifting to with a Jaguars season that is all but lost at this point. So Blake Bortles came out, went 6 of 12 for, I think, 61 yards, had 6 carries for 30 yards. The offense was not moving. Third consecutive game where they did not score in the first half. Is it an all-around thing, Chris? Obviously, there are a lot of people to blame, but is there one person in particular can get blamed on, you can shift more of the blame to, or are we going to say, like, hey, this is Blake Bortles as much as is the offensive line, as much as it's Nate Hackett, as much as it's the run game? What's your take on it at this point?
I mean, I think it all has to kind of, the top of the pyramid, I think, is Nathaniel Hackett still. Because the play callings just still doesn't seem to be there. I mean, we had TJ Yeldon had 12 carries today. And I mean, granted, they started the game off with run pass, which right then and there is horrible play calling. You shouldn't be doing that, especially when the offense isn't working on the first two drives. And then next thing you know, I think it was the third or fourth drive, Blake Bortles throws on first down and gets a first down. So I think it still kind of leaves with Hackett. But then obviously the next tier down is Blake Bortles, because when he is throwing, just seems to look lost out there again. And I think the third one would be the receivers, because damn, they've been dropping a lot of balls lately. They are not helping Blake Bortles out at all. I mean, I think Keelan Cole had what, 3 or 4 drops today. And that's just, you just can't have that, especially when the offense is struggling. You can't be dropping passes that Blake is somehow getting to you. So there's a lot of blame to go around, but we can obviously kind of dive and compare the quarterback play in the second segment a little more.
Well, actually, last week I was willing to put a lot of it on Hackett, and in weeks past I have. This week I'd flip it. I'd go quarterback first, Hackett second, offensive line third, receivers fourth. Because when Kessler came out, they didn't change much. They passed a little bit more, but at the same time, they were still giving the ball to TJ Yeldon, and they were running all of the same passing concepts. They weren't targeting deep. They didn't do that with Bortles, and they didn't do that with Kessler. But with Kessler in the game, he was actually completing the passes accurately that Blake Bortles was leaving on the field and has left on the field for the past couple of weeks. Do I think it's an issue that Hackett isn't doing anything more than that and isn't sticking to the run a little bit more when it does work? Absolutely. I think that is 100% an issue. But at the end of the day, nothing changed in terms of what type of concepts they were trying to bring out in the passing game. one quarterback did it a lot better than the other. So that's where I would put Bortles at the top of the totem pole. And I do think that he as a whole is holding this offense back. And the style of play they're trying to get out of him is holding the offense back. They can't keep trying to run the ball when teams are stacking the box, which Houston still did do today. And then they put the pressure on Blake and he gets put into a terrible situation and he can't perform, as if being in even just a decent situation like that, that's still not good enough for Blake Bortles. He's got to be in a great one to perform well. But all in all, he just wasn't able to do what Cody Kessler was able to do today. So we'll go ahead then and talk about the quarterbacks one-on-one. What did you see from Cody Kessler, who replaced Bortles with about 10 minutes left in the third after Bortles came out and within three plays fumbled the ball again? Houston was in great scoring position, scored a touchdown, and went up 20 to nothing.
I mean, Kessler looked like a quarterback. He looked like somebody who was a natural thrower of the football. He's not nearly as mobile as Kessler or as Bortles, and can't kind of get out of dodge like Bortles can. He was making throws that Bortles really hasn't been able to almost his entire career. Yes, Blake Bortles has made some very good throws and can make some of those throws, but not consistently. But Cody Kessler was going through his reads very quickly. If you probably looked at snap to throw, it was probably a solid 2 seconds shorter than when Blake would ever do. Blake seems to have to hold the ball for a little bit before he makes his decision. But Kessler, man, as soon as he got that ball, he knew where it was going. And he was hitting some pretty decent windows. So he just looked like a natural thrower of the football and seemed to be kind of commanding the offense a little bit better than Blake has been probably all year.
I do agree. And one thing that I noticed about their games that was a little different is you said it. Kessler's not as mobile as Bortles. Can he be mobile in terms of throwing on the run and rolling out? Yes, absolutely. But at the same time, he's not going to be able to escape as well when he's under pressure. At the same time as that, you know, when Bortles does get pressure on, sometimes he'll run, sometimes he'll be forced into a terrible decision. And he does that a lot more than escape and make a good play when he's under pressure. Kessler, you know, if he's put under pressure, he knows not to do anything dumb with the ball. He'll take the sack or he won't try and force a bad throw. And I think that's something that this offense needs, is they do not have any room for mistakes, right? Like the way this offense runs with power running and you have to be precise throwing these short to intermediate passes.
I mean, just as a kind of off tangent thing, the very first mistake the Jaguars ever did was build their offense around a power run running back who was made of glass, but that's for another day. But I mean, it's just really words for me just can't describe kind of what the season has been like so far per se. Should Kessler have maybe gotten a chance earlier? Sure. But I mean, it was refreshing to see Doug Marrone put Cody Kessler in that situation, because I think obviously previously with Gus Bradley, we would have never seen that. So Marrone said in the post game that benching Bortles was just something to get a damn spark out of the team. And I think it kind of did, because the defense kind of got livened up. The crowd and the stadium got livened up. So
live and living, yeah, made up, you know, words, but yeah, you know, it's living, okay.
Living up, you know, we're making up words for a made up football team. So, it's just, I don't know whether it wouldn't surprise me though, if Bortles was starting next week in London.
I think the exact same thing. And that was a question we were going to get later, but I guess we'll answer it now. I think Kessler is the better quarterback for this team right now, just in terms of what they're trying to do offensively. They run a ton of West Coast passing concepts, the short to intermediate quick throws that Kessler put on display today that he could do accurately and timely. Blake Bortles signed the extension this past offseason. They've dedicated themselves to him. Dave Caldwell is married to Blake Bortles, and we know this. Like, if Dave Caldwell could find any way to ensure that Blake Bortles will retire a Jaguar, the starting quarterback of the Jaguars, for that matter, he will make it happen. I think Bortles starts this upcoming week, and I don't think we'd see any significant changes to that until after the bye. Say if Bortles comes out and lays yet again an egg on the field, but this time in London. we're going to dive a little bit more into the defense, maybe talk some of the stuff that went on in the locker room. And I'm sure we'll still be able to make comments about the quarterbacks, as that's the main storyline when we come back from these quick messages.
You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they're your best bet this season. They've been in the business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game, live betting, over-unders on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25 when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. If you're willing to hold out until 7 p.m., you get an extra $25 free play by using promo code LOCKEDON and add 25 at the end of it. If it's up to you guys, but I'd wait until after dinner to take extra money. You play, you win, you get paid.
So we do want to focus on the defense a little bit. I thought the defense played pretty well today, right? Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're still in their drought of turnovers, and they only had one sack on the day, I believe, from Dante Fowler Jr., and that was early in the game. So splash play-wise, like I said last pod and the pod before that and probably the pod before that, the splash plays aren't there this year. The interceptions, the forced fumbles, the sacks, the tackles for losses, the big plays, they aren't happening. A lot of kids aren't getting beds this year from Ashley Home Furniture. So, I mean, that's one thing. But if you're looking at just between, I mean, just kind of looking at the numbers, there's still, I mean, granted, the last 2 weeks before this one were bad. Points allowed, yards allowed, all that. But overall on the year, still holding most, I believe, most offenses under 300 yards a game, and the points per game is down. And you have to factor in some of these points for these games are offensive turnovers and the picks, or the pick six in the Chiefs game. So statistically, the Jaguars are still a very dominant defense. It's just they're not getting the splash plays like we were used to last year, and I think that's kind of setting a false narrative for them defensively, because you look in there like, oh, well, they don't have any interceptions. Oh, they don't have a lot of sacks. They only have one on the year, or on the day. So I think that's one thing. But overall, I would say the Jaguars defense is playing solid given the circumstance that the offense has been putting them in with all these short fields, or whether it was Logan Cook struggling on a few punts today and really just giving the defense bad positioning, or DJ Chark fumbling, or it might have been Westbrook, one of them fumbling a kickoff or punt and making the offense start on the 1 yard line. The defense has been plagued with the inefficiencies and inability of the special teams units and the offensive units to move the ball and put the defense in a good spot. So just looking at that, the defense has been playing fairly well, aside from maybe what some of the stat categories are saying.
I definitely agree. I think Todd Walsh called a much better game this week. He ran some more press, and that allowed the team to get pressure on the QB. In return, they then started running the ball, and that was effective. And I think the Jaguars did become very worn out by the constant inefficiencies of the offense, putting them in terrible position. They're not getting rest. Constant three play drives, just not getting it done in the first half. And by that point, it was already too late. We saw them play a little bit better in the second half when they had a little bit more time. In the first two drives of the game, Yannick Ngakoue, on my count, had four pressures on Deshaun Watson. Well, he's already one of the league leaders in pressures, so he might not be getting home, but the pressure was there, and he was doing that again today. And we saw that they were held to two field goals early on, one of them coming from a really great great for them. Blake Bortles with the fumble, putting them in great field position, and they were still stopped for just a field goal. So I thought the defense did better. Everyone wants to talk about the matchup, Hopkins versus Ramsey. Give me your thoughts on that one today, Chris.
Hopkins won. I mean, there's really nothing. I mean, although Hopkins only had three receptions, one of them was a fantastic one-handed grab down the sideline with Ramsey in coverage.
That was not, he was not burnt on that play.
He wasn't burnt. It was just a great play by Hopkins, so you still have to give Hopkins the win.
I agree, but ESPN and other big media places that love to get their clicks are calling it, here it is specifically, a video from ESPN. Hopkins burns Ramsey for awesome one-handed snag. That was literally perfect play by Ramsey. He was step for step with him. Hopkins got a little bit of an arm bar. Not really a push off, but kind of an arm bar for separation. That's how we got his one step of separation and made a fantastic play. You give it to Hopkins, and I mean, that catch was fantastic. One of the better ones I've seen this year, but I wouldn't call it burning him.
And then the second, he had another catch. I forget. It was probably going by the yardage.
The touchdown.
Well, yeah, I was going to say he had the touchdown, which he clearly won against Ramsey. Ramsey wasn't even within a yard or two. It was just Hopkins went up and it was uncontested. It was an easy touchdown. Then wherever the third one was, Hopkins had three catches on eight targets. I'm not sure whether Ramsey was on all eight targets. Watson had a few overthrows and underthrows. But overall, I mean, I wouldn't say that Hopkins blew Ramsey out of the water and was just torching him like the last time they played. But Hopkins definitely got the win because he had the basically uncontested touchdown pass. He could have had two if Watson didn't throw the ball 3 yards out of bounds. He had Ramsey probably beat by three steps in the end zone. And then the fantastic one-handed catch. So I'll give it to Hopkins, but it obviously wasn't a blowout or a burn by which ESPN and Bleacher Report would say it was.
Definitely. I agree with you. And I think that really would just about do it for the defense. They had a fine day. I think we put it perfectly. So I guess we can go ahead and take it to Twitter questions unless you have, the locker room. There was a big blow up in the locker room after the game. And it started with Yannick Ngakoue on the sidelines getting pulled late in the game. I think it was the Texans' final drive. He got pulled off the field. He started blowing up, got in Coach Marion Hobby's face on the sidelines and was yelling at him. Then was seen on camera talking to Dante Fowler. Looked like he said something along the lines of, and excuse my French, that's that favoritism shit that I was talking about. And after that, the media was about to go into the locker room. They could hear from Doug Marrone's press conference across the hall, the screaming and yelling going on in there. They were about to walk in, and suddenly the doors were shut on them before they could get in as Yannick Ngakoue was being held back by Calais Campbell, and he apparently ripped away from Campbell to go and get into some heated argument. We don't know who it was directed at. Obviously, there's frustration. Fingers are starting to get pointed. This isn't good, right? Three-game losing streak is obviously never good, but for a young team that we know can beat hot-headed at times, this is where it starts to fall apart, right?
I'm actually not entirely sure about that. I think seeing some life out of this team might actually be good because, honestly, it seems like the last few weeks, there's been almost some complacency. I don't want to say that they're not trying out there, but it just seems like there's no fire or passion, really. The only people that I see to seem have life on the field are Yannick almost always. Miles Jack always seems to be amped up. Ronnie Harrison. And Malik Jackson's always playing. But it seems like everybody else just doesn't have that pep in their step. Or granted, losing will do that, but maybe some internal conflict might be good for the team. Maybe it will, light a fire under them. But I mean, if it continues to happen, then yeah, it's going to snowball. And next thing you know, you're going to have an avalanche. But I think I'm not entirely opposed to there being some heated arguments in the locker room because they should be angry. The team is playing really bad right now. Now, granted, we just said the defense has been playing good, but they're not playing up to the standard that they know they can play at. And I think that's the biggest thing. They know that they have the talent to be able to force turnovers. Just like Tashaun Gibson had an easy interception in the back of the end zone, dropped it. You go back to the Patriots or Jets game or Titans game. I forget which home game it was. Ramsey has that almost identical Seahawks interception in the back of the end zone, drops it. Tashaun Gibson has a really good interception, negated by an AJ Bouye holding call. You have so many turnovers that are being negated by themselves. They're shooting themselves in the foot defensively when it comes to splash plays and really kind of shifting momentums in games and helping out the offense a little bit. And maybe they should be a little bit mad at themselves. Maybe they need to challenge each other a little more, because obviously I don't think it's that bad that there is some heated discussions going on in the locker room.
See, now I totally disagree, because we saw it in the preseason where these guys were starting to fight with each other. And at that point, the team was fired up about how good they were, and they came out playing pretty well to start the season too. But we saw that dysfunction. Ramsey getting suspended, yelling at the media for saying, quit filming that shit, bro. The media doing their job, getting hot-headed and sitting on a high horse. We see Yannick Ngakoue and Dante Fowler charging at each other twice in the same practice, fighting. And we see Yannick Ngakoue ripping himself away from Calais Campbell, at least according to the report that we saw today from media members looking into the locker room. Someone made a joke that Yannick Ngakoue shed a block from Calais Campbell better than he did on the field today. I think that's inaccurate, but doing that to go and continue getting heated with another teammate, and they had to close the doors from the media coming in to figure out what's going on with this team. You see Jalen Ramsey, when they do open the doors to the media, coming out and saying, listen, I'm not allowed to say what the problem is with this team because I'll get in trouble, but everyone knows what the problem is with this team. Now, I think there's two options there. One being a bit more obvious in the quarterback, the other one being the coaching. But it's one of those two for sure. There's no other way around it. This team, I believe, right now on this 3-game losing streak, this losing record that they are not used to as this team under this leadership, I think is imploding.
Yeah, I mean, that very well could be it. I'm not going to say that that's not. I'm just saying it might not be the end of the world that some of these guys are fired up, because they should be. They shouldn't be complacent with a 3-game losing streak. They shouldn't be satisfied with what's going on both in the locker room and on the field. Maybe there's stuff that we don't know about, and there probably is. They shouldn't be complacent and or satisfied with anything that's going on right now by almost any facet of the ball besides the defense. They are probably at the top of saying that, well, at least we're kind of doing what we're supposed to and stopping offenses. But like I said, turnover, splash plays, and I think the defensive line is gradually getting more and more frustrated, because I don't know how many holding calls the refs are missing against this defensive line. Like, you could probably say this about most NFL teams, but at least from what I'm watching, you could probably call two or three holding calls on each defensive lineman that they're not calling, and it's just leading to quarterbacks being able to get out of the pocket and scramble and pick up big plays, convert third downs, and they're probably growing frustrated with that. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody gets fined in the next week or two or by the end of the season for making comments in an oppressor about the refereeing in the NFL, and honestly, maybe they probably should have a good case for it.
Maybe, but I also, I mean, I agree. I see it. I see what you're talking about. I also look around the league in every game, and I think even on both sides for the Jaguars offensive line, I think there is probably a missed holding call on, I would venture to say, almost every single play in the NFL. So
I think Josh Walker probably gets away with false starts almost every play. He has probably a solid half second to a full second jump on the snap.
But so I think that that's a frustration that they'll need to hold their tongue to, or you take that to a higher ranking official. Like, we remember a couple years ago when the team actually went to the NFL about what was deemed 16 missed calls against the Packers. So I think that's a higher up issue. I think if they want to display this fire that they're showing and fighting with each other in the locker room and on the sidelines and making comments to the media that starts to point fingers, Show that fire on the field, because the fire's not there. The fire went out in 2017.
I mean, I completely agree. I would love to see that fire transfer over to the field, because the defense doesn't play angry like they did last year. Last year, they were in your face and hard hitting and making all these plays, and now they just kind of go out there like they're already demoralized and like they're already losing. So, I mean, I don't know. I would like to see a spark or a tide or something change in the defense, and maybe you make personnel changes. I know last week we said that Ronnie Harrison should be starting at strong safety, and today further strengthened that. Harrison was playing pretty well when Patman went down and was kind of playing that nickel spot. And I mean, what can you even name a play that Church has made in the last like 2 or 3 weeks?
Like, no, because he's the only plays he's made are bad ones. Yeah, it's been consistent. He looks washed.
That's it right there. Ronnie Harrison has that youth. He has that fire. He's a very fiery player, and he's very aggressive. And I think he would be great to plug in. I think you might need to start changing the culture a little bit. I know they have a young roster, but maybe start plugging some of this kind of younger talent into these starting roles.
I definitely agree, and I'm with you on Harrison. I think there needs to be change all around, and that goes back to the offense. I think Kessler should be the starter. I don't think we elaborated on this enough in the last segment. We said we think Bortles will be the starter. I 100% think Kessler is the fit for this offense, and I'm not saying he's really that great or even that good by any means. He fits the West Coast passing concepts that this team wants to run. We saw him hitting those passes in stride that Bortles does not hit in stride. He hits them with ducks. Like, we see him completing these easy passes, and they're short little passes, but they're schemed to get one guy open or just schemed to be quick releases. Kessler does that well. I think that's the biggest personnel change they need to make. I think they just need to do something on the offensive line. Never thought I'd say this. Maybe they should start playing Eric Flowers next week at left tackle.
I said that exact thing.
I mean, maybe they should, and that's so gross, but I think they need to do that.
I think Eric Flowers is better than a third string left tackle. I mean,
well, third string right guard who got thrown
in. You can't get much worse. So why not try the guy?
Why they've said this for like 2 years? Brandon Linder can play left tackle. They've ran him there in practice before. Why is he not there? And Tyler Shatley in at center, who played well in Linder's absence last year.
Why is that not incompetent coaching? I mean, that's just about it.
I don't believe that's a Hackett call. That's a Marone call.
In
which case, Marone says today, like, you know, there needs to be like all these positions are open. Good. You better not have the same starting lineup next week.
Yeah, like there should be some significant changes. I think Chark needs to be getting more playing time.
Chark needs to be in on Vermoncrief on it, taking at least like 50% of his snaps,
At this point over Cole. Cole obviously is struggling right now, and just give Chark some reps. I mean, you drafted him early for a reason. You obviously really like him. Why not show that? Because honestly, you're at the point in the season where you have nothing to lose. I mean, granted, this is a very weak division. If the Colts win next week and the Jaguars and Texans lose, there is a three-way tie for second at 3-4. Or actually, it would be 3-5.
So, subtract Marquise Lee, because obviously his injury has held him out this year. People went into this season saying, and it was every day someone would say, Keelan Cole is going to be the best receiver on this team this year without a doubt. And Dante Moncrief is going to be the veteran leader that they need to play well, and he's going to do a fine job in that role. We are 7 games in. Dede Westbrook is the best receiver on this team by a landslide, and DJ Chark has the most upside of any receiver, including Keelan Cole at this point with how Cole has been playing. Hot take. I don't know if you agree, but that's where I stand at this point. And I think we need to see these major changes. We need to see the lineup shake up at receiver. We need to see Kessler starting at least this week. You got to do it. If Bortles is so pissed, great. Piss him off more. Make it, as Marone said, he was pissed and he wouldn't want it any other way. Good. Piss Blake off more. Make him have some drive to not make foolish mistakes. Make him like relearn how to throw the damn football, man. He's playing poorly, and it's holding the offense back with a lot of other problems, but the quarterback is the centerpiece of your offense, even in a power heavy scheme, and keep pissing him off and maybe that'll work. But for now, I say you play Kessler. You work on the offensive line. You play Linder at left tackle and Chatley at center. You shake up the receivers. You give Yeldon the ball more, and you hope Carlos Hyde's crash course goes well this week so you can plug him in this upcoming week. And you hope, you pray to God that you see some changes, because otherwise the season's done.
You put Chatley at center and Linder at left tackle, and next thing you know, you might have like a top half offensive line in the league.
I'm Chatley, all for it.
Chatley played really good in Linder's absence last year at center, and I mean, I can't speak on Linder playing left tackle, but it's probably better than what they have trotting out there now. So
they have a converted right guard with no.
And if they
starts.
if they don't have Linder at left tackle, at least put Eric Flowers out there. They obviously liked him enough to where they claimed him, or they worked him out and signed him. So obviously there's something there that they like. What else do you have to lose? Because Josh Walker isn't playing horrible, but you can get probably better play out of Flowers at this point.
I think that will just about sum up our second segment. When we come back, we're going to be answering your questions from Twitter. I'll give you guys a heads up. You guys are all just as sad as we are. So I've got quite a few questions / takes here. One of them we already answered about Kessler starting next week in London. I don't see it happening. I think they're going to commit themselves to Bortles and keep shooting themselves in the foot with that. But I'll go ahead and get some other questions. One kind of similar to that about Kessler, coming from Super Epic Gamer Bro. How would you describe Kessler's outing in one word? Chris, I've already hit you with the one word answer, and I'm going to hit you with it again.
Refreshing.
I agree. I actually completely agree.
It was nice seeing somebody under center who could throw a football properly, who could lead a receiver, who could, in this case, score points. So that was something. Now, I would just say refreshing. Obviously, there's a lot to grow on. It wasn't a perfect performance by any means, but it was refreshing.
It was a far from great performance. He threw 9 completions on 30 attempts with a ton of pressure, got sacked 4 times in less than a half of football. And at the same time, when he was able to get the ball out, it was damn near as accurate as it could be, leading receivers well. And your word's perfect. It's refreshing to see that. When was the last time we saw consistent passes leading receivers well in an offense that is built on leading receivers on short to intermediate routes to give them yards after the catch? That's exactly what this offense calls for. Really refreshing to see it happen. A question from Father Draco. If the Jags do decide to go forward with Kessler, do they hang on to Bortles? Does he have any trade value at all? Would you trade him if they move forward with Kessler? With the deadline coming up, there have been crazy rumors about trades across the league, teams willing to part with their arms and legs and heads across the entire league. I guess that's not too wild of a question. I would probably say no, because you don't really have any other option at quarterback except for Tanner Lee. Yeah. In a vacuum, if there was another option, 100%, because he's not on a bad deal. I'm sure there are teams out there that would think that either have the mindset of we could fix Blake Bortles from the positives we've seen, or of the mindset of our quarterback sucks, we might as well take a flyer on a guy on a cheap deal. But I don't think it's plausible right now, because they wouldn't have any other option at this point if Kessler got hurt.
I think Blake is on this team till at least the end of the season, barring like some off the wall trade. I think Blake is going to be a Jaguar till at least the end of the season. Now, past this season, I don't know. If you cut him this upcoming offseason, you actually save $4.5 million. Granted, you have a lot on the dead cap, but I mean, if you're just trying to clear up a roster space that you know you're not going to need and give yourself a little more breathing room in the cap, you might just have to do it. And I think that's how they structure that deal. Yes, they'll get the dead cap, and yes, Blake gets his money, but you still save on the books and you free up that spot. Next thing you know, you have Kessler and probably a rookie coming in.
Someone, CoopDog24, he had a take for us. I just want to hear your response. Trade for Joe Flacco in the offseason.
In the offseason, huh? I feel like the Ravens asking price for Flacco would probably be pretty good. I know they have Lamar Jackson, so that might drive the price down a little bit. But if we're trading for quarterbacks, I would rather send Honestly, I would probably send a first round pick to Los Angeles for Phillip Rivers. I mean, if we're doing a big quarterback trade, that's probably who I would target. Phillip Rivers in this offense, I think, would probably do pretty damn good, especially if you have a competent running game, whether it be Yeldon and Hyde or Hyde and Fournette or whoever. I think Rivers would be good, but those are, I don't think they do a big quarterback trade like that in the offseason.
From Kamal, can you talk about how losing the coin toss has affected the all-important start of games for us the last 3 weeks? I mean, I'll address this seriously. Kansas City and Dallas got the ball to start the second half, and we had the ball to start the game against both teams, and they got the ball to start the second half. And we got whooped, and the offense didn't score in the first half.
It didn't matter in the second half.
And today we got the ball to start the second half, and we didn't do well. And Bortles got benched after that drive.
Actually, no,
So
I'm pretty sure the Texans got the ball to start this drive. Did they?
did they? I thought it. Well, I'm trying to figure. No, because Kessler came in after about 10 minutes. No,
Well,
with 10 minutes left in, with
that could have
10.
been a quick three and out because I'm pretty sure the Texans won it. Maybe, yeah, because I'm pretty sure the
No.
Jaguars started the game on offense.
The Texans won it in deferred. Wait.
Yeah, so then they would have gotten the second half.
Let me pull this up. I'm going right now. I swear I thought I remembered it being that the Jaguars had the ball to start. Oh, no.
No,
No,
because
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm
Bortles
sorry. I
fumbled to
was.
start the second half, didn't he?
I'm sorry, I was wrong. Yeah, the Texans did get the ball to start the second half. So I guess this is a legitimate question, and I totally I didn't understand. I was wrong. I'm sorry. I was wrong. Well, I don't I guess that's a good question at that point because the Jaguars have then started the ball with the ball to start 3 games in a row and they haven't scored. Maybe there would be a bit of a momentum shift in the game if the defense started with the ball and caused a three and out, and the Jaguars capitalized on that. Is that it, or is that re, am I, am I re, am I reaching?
I mean, anything. I think if the defense forced a three and out, and I think just field position, maybe instead of starting your 25, you start your own 35 or 40. I don't know. Obviously, could help because I mean, I know last year and going into this year, I would always want the Jags to start on defense because I wanted the defense to set the tone. But I mean, the last 3 weeks, I don't think it really mattered. It wouldn't have mattered because Cowboys dropped 40, the Chiefs dropped 30. Well, I'll say 23 because 7 of it came from a pick six. But I mean, the opposing offenses are still scoring points. So maybe in the Chiefs game, it has a different effect because that was a closer game. Closer quotes, quotation marks. But I don't know. I mean, I would like to be able to pin it on losing coin tosses results in losing games, but I think it's much deeper than that.
Yeah, I don't see too much change coming from this offense, no matter if they have the ball first or second, because they're not moving at any time, at least with Blake Bortles there. Like they're just not. It's not happening. They had in the 3 first halves in a row, they went only 3 of their 16 drives resulted in 40 or more yards. So I don't know. I don't think too much is changing from that. Last question. Are there any guys in terms of quarterbacks for this upcoming draft that that could work for us, or are we screwed until 2020? Obviously, if Herbert and Haskins decide to stay, that being Justin Herbert of Oregon, Dwayne Haskins of Ohio State, who are my QB1 and QB2 right now, and I haven't done enough work on quarterbacks yet, but from what I have
That's
watched of
pretty
them,
consensus.
it's also pretty consensus. There are a couple people that might sway a different
This
way.
is a bad quarterback class.
Those are the two prize possess those are the two prize possessions, and if they're not declaring, I'm not touching a quarterback in round one. And so you better hope that those guys both declare if the Jags are going for a quarterback, and you better hope the Jags are drafting high, because that's what they got to do. If not, I don't see much. I don't really know much about the free agent market for quarterbacks this upcoming year. I think they might be stuck with Bortles. If they put out like a near 500 season, I think they're stuck with Bortles unless they trade up
An
or for
intriguing,
one of
I
those
mean,
QBs.
intriguing guy that was brought up to us today was David Blau. I don't know. He was impressive in the Purdue Ohio State game, leading Purdue to a major upset win over Ohio State. He's a guy that I'm actually kind of excited to dive into because statistically he's gotten better through his college career. He's now a senior, so he's a little more polished than some of these younger guys, but obviously might not have the talent upside. But I mean, honestly, for the Jaguars at this point, yes, it'd be nice to have a guy like Tua or Justin Herbert, but honestly, a safe quarterback at this point is all I really want. And I think if you can get a safe guy, which statistically it looks like David Blau is, maybe in like the second round or third round, just somebody who doesn't turn the ball over and can kind of just move the ball efficiently, that's something that I just want at this point, is just a safe quarterback. So that'll be somebody that I'll probably dive into. He'll probably be my first prospect of 2019 that I'll look at. So stay tuned for that. But maybe he'll grow his resume after a very impressive win over Ohio State.
Now, with that being said, the Jaguars have their first losing record under Doug Marrone. It's draft season. I'm sorry if you don't like it. You don't have to follow along with it, but Chris and I are both going to be diving into a lot of draft work. We're going to have Philip Preuss coming back to writing with Locked On Jaguars. He's been doing a lot of great work for BCC, and he's going to continue to do so, as well as his own scouting with Optimum Scouting and Scout Turf. He is a busy dude when it comes to writing about football, and he is going to be doing some scouting for us here at Locked On Jaguars as well, bringing us a lot of different scouting reports. We're going to get a lot of our guys on the staff doing them. They're going to be on Twitter. They're going to be on the Locked On Jaguars website. They're not all going to be quarterbacks, like 100%. We're going to look at all the different needs for this team. I, for one, have been focusing on offensive line, tight ends, and the surprise pick defensive line, as you know, how they approached the Taven Bryan pick last year, doing the same thing along the interior, maybe for this upcoming class. But we're going to be doing a lot of different work on it, so you guys can be sure to follow along with that. As for today's pod and pods for the rest of the week, be sure to stick around, hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find us. We'll bring out a couple more pods this week. We'll get a crossover as we are getting ready for the London trip. Jaguars will be taking on the Eagles this upcoming week. Hopefully, they can break a three-game
Unfortunately,
skid.
we will not be going to London.
No, but we're going to be talking to someone that will be on Tuesday. We might have to post that one that night with the crossover coming on Wednesday. We have a surprise guest coming on with us this upcoming week. Chris doesn't even know who it is. He's probably in shock right now. I bet he can guess who it is. Don't say it if you know, Chris. We're going to have a surprise guest coming on at some point this week that I think a lot of you guys are going to enjoy getting to hear from. And we'll let you know when that episode's up. As for now, be sure to follow me on Twitter at Zach_Goodall, Chris at Misto Cristofo, and of course, the Locked On Jaguars handle.